From the Art Center in downtown Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning us in, everyone in Radio Land. I've got one of my favorite conversationalists in the studio today, Bruce Whitman of Eagle Video. Say hi, Bruce.
Hey, guys. How's everything doing out there?
Going to get right back to this guy. Also got in the studio with me, Will Williams, sitting by, as well as Rocco at the helm.
Always a pleasure to be on with you, Claudio.
Likewise. I want to give a quick shout-out, because I may forget to do this later, to my underwriters, the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council. And now that I've got that done, over to you, Bruce. I'm sorry to hear that you recently lost your father, and I thought we'd talk about him just a little bit.
I think dads are really important to the family.
I just lost mine as well, yeah.
Yeah, I lost mine this last February, and he was like 87, so it's probably his time. But he touched us in a lot of ways. I have a twin brother, but we both learned from him different things. I mean, from my dad was an electrical engineer, got a master's degree at Stanford in night classes.
That's pretty impressive in night classes.
Yeah. He's got 5 patents to his name. But he's also had a love of music, photography. And so I got that love. I'm a third generation shutterbug.
All right.
And we brought into the my company, Eagle Video Productions, also a love of music. He loved classical music and jazz, and I'm a musician and a songwriter.
I think the whole family is somehow musically inclined, isn't
I think
it?
So. Yeah. You're right. And then my twin brother got his love of electrical engineering. So he got his degree in Berkeley, and he used to work at Bell Labs, and now he works in Indianapolis at another firm designing new stuff for people. So we got touched a lot from my dad. My dad brought a lot to the family. He raised 5 of us.
And, that's a handful.
Yeah. So I grew up in Santa Clara, California, Silicon Valley, and then moved to Raleigh when I was young. In fact, it's just ironic. You talk about destiny. I moved to Raleigh the same day on the same year as my future wife.
My goodness.
I came from Santa Clara, California. She came from a little town in Bertie County.
Have you ever mapped out the migration of that incident?
Well, we just know the date. You know, the date. And then she met me a couple years later, and we dated for 7 years, been married 37 years.
Incredible. And still very much in love, from what I can tell.
Oh, awesome. She's awesome.
She's a fine lady. I enjoyed meeting her.
We spend on our anniversary, we spend a week at the beach.
All right. Now, how frequently do you see your brother, for example, that lives so far away?
Not that often. When we were raised, talking about my dad again, we were not raised to be very close. So we just chat every now and then, and we see each other on occasions like my dad's funeral.
Yeah.
I had my niece just got married, so we got to see him then. So we're not that close, but he's an interesting guy, very different from me, even though we were twins.
Really, that's amazing.
Yeah,
usually there's more common ground between twins.
Well, we were fraternal, not identical. If that makes any
sense. Right, right, okay.
And I always say that he got the smarts and I got the looks.
Bruce, I used to work with a fella for 30 years on and off who was from Bertie County.
Really? What town?
Orlander.
Oh, yeah.
And he grew up in Bertie County, Orlander.
Was he in a radio station there?
No. Well, he wasn't with radio. I worked for 40 years in the public schools.
Oh, wow.
And he was a coach and a teacher and a great friend. He passed away about 3 or 4 years ago.
So he must know about Roxable, North Carolina, then.
I'm sure.
That's where my wife came from.
Give me a quick rundown on Bruce Whitman himself, because you've got quite a few fans eavesdropping here today, so I want to make sure that I cover things about you that they know or don't know.
Well, I guess I don't know where to go with that.
We can start at I know Ernie Hood, for example, from Inside Studios. I believe you've worked with Catherine Devine at some point or other. Just to touch something off.
Well,
I used to be at Inside Studios, not working, but hanging out.
Well, it's interesting. I can go back in time to deciding what I wanted to do with my life. Okay, I didn't know what I wanted to do, like most young kids, and I was I almost quit school. My parents made me at least graduate from high school.
I can relate to that myself.
I worked digging ditches and crap like that, and finally decided I was smarter than that. But I didn't know what I wanted to do, And then it hit me one day. I look at a billboard. This is like St. Paul being knocked off the horse, okay? Epiphany. I see a billboard, and there is a Channel 5 poster there, and there's a guy with a camera on his shoulder. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to be a cameraman. I want to be a news cameraman for Channel 5. And 7 years later, that's what I got to do. And I got to work for that guy that had that camera on his shoulder, Jack Edwards. And so so I spent 10 years at Channel 5. I was in a studio. Then I was an engineering, ENG technician. I did all live shots, the satellite stuff. And then became a news photographer, hang out of the helicopter, my favorite thing to do. And then... Then later,
I mean, out the side window, strapped in, basically.
Oh yeah, well, more the camera. The camera is strapped in.
Great.
But didn't want to drop the camera. But yeah, and then had a company with a partner for 6 years, and then I've had Eagle Video since '91. So I'm on my 25th year with Eagle Video Productions.
We do congratulations. Marketing video, training, 25th.
And I want to tell you why we're called Eagle Video, because when I was at Channel 5, they sent us to Russia. To the Soviet Union in November 1982. It just happened to be the day of Brezhnev's funeral. So they took my gear away, and I couldn't get it back for days. And a lot of people tried to help us get it back. And
were they going to edit what you had? Or what was
no, 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 no. They wouldn't let us shoot.
Oh, I see.
We came in. We landed at the airport in Moscow, and they just took our gear away and locked it up and gave me a piece of paper, said, here's your receipt. You can't have it back until you leave the country. Well, the problem was that we weren't going to leave from Moscow. We were going to leave from Leningrad. And I was with the reason we were there is with the North Carolina Friendship Force. It was 100 people, including the governor's wife, and they were all there on a Friendship Force tour to help, you know, just meet people, meet real people,
right,
and get to learn more about it. And this is not – this is – during the bad times with the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm,
not Russia, Soviet Union. So we were there. You had the guns, and you had the KGB, and our phones were tapped and all that. And we worked really hard to get our camera back, and they weren't going to give it back. But we were going to go on a train from Moscow to Leningrad and leave from Leningrad. So what happened is all 100 people said, we're not leaving Moscow until those poor people get the camera back. And so they gave it to us back as we were leaving to go on the train, the night train to Leningrad, and we got to shoot some stuff in Leningrad. So I came back to make a small, long story, a little bit longer. I when I had an opportunity to name my own company, I named it after a national symbol.
Ah, okay.
Eagle Video. Yeah.
So I had a sense about that, yeah.
I have a really a strong feeling for our country. I'm a patriot. I love our country. I love the flag. I think that it's a great country, and it does a lot of good for a lot of people. And so I was just happy that I could name my own company when I had a chance to do that.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of eagles in my office, and my wife feels like she's a prey when she walks in there. All the predators looking at her. I got 20 or 30 eagles. You know, I got, you know, curios, and I've got paintings, all sorts of stuff. Ironically, you know, my wife's a painter, an artist, and one of her heroes was a gentleman from Canada named Robert Bateman, who is world famous. He does wildlife, kind of realistic acrylic Africa stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he just happened to come to Fuquay Varina near Garner one day near my birthday, and to be there. She actually got to go see him. I said, look, let's go. It's your hero. We're going to go meet him and see him and talk to him. And while he was there, he had a painting of an eagle. So I got to have him sign it. And so now I have a picture that Robert Bateman painted of the eagle that has signed. It's in my office.
Fantastic.
So I have a lot of eagles.
But to sidetrack from that for one moment, I was stage manager, this is a year or more ago, a couple of years ago, at Carolina Theater of Durham, and we had the band America.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And as stage manager, of course, I get to have conversations with these folks that very few other people do. It's almost like you're hosting them.
Yeah.
And I remember asking the lead singer, I forget his name right now, I'm drawing a lot of blanks this morning, but
there
just
Gary. There's Gary, and there's Dewey, and
the blonde-haired guy.
I forgot his name.
Yeah, that's
that guy.
Anyway, so this is obviously it was his band.
Yeah.
And I asked him. I said, "By the way, where did the name America come from? You're an English group." And he said, "Oh well, at the time we really wanted to come back to America, and we were looking for every reason and every way to do it. They were overseas." And he said, "And then this group called itself Chicago." And I said, "Yeah, pretty good group." He goes, "Well, we just decided to call ourselves America." He says, "Funny because nobody ever asked us that question."
Wow. Yeah.
And I just wanted to sort of cast that off Eagle Video.
Well, you know, Claudio, the Beatles You know why they picked the name Beatles?
There's
a story behind that, because they idolized Buddy Holly and the Crickets.
Oh, my God.
You see, and the Crickets were around in the late 50s with Buddy Holly before he was killed in this plane crash. And when their time came to take the stage, so to speak, before they were popular in this country, they called themselves the Beatles, because the Crickets worked with Buddy Holly.
That was taken.
And then they spelled it differently.
They did.
That was very clever.
So they were clever.
Yeah, very true. I never thought about the spelling, yeah.
It might have been the manager who picked the name. I'm not sure if it was Paul McCartney or John Lennon or George Harrison or Ringo or whoever. But that's why they chose that name, the Beatles.
Well, on that note, why don't we go to one of your musical interludes, Rocco?
Okay. We're glad you found us. We're WCOM, Claudio Speakeasy, and Radio Theater is what you're listening to right now.
Science is endlessly fascinating, and some of the world's most significant science is going on right here in the Triangle. This is Ernie Hood. Join me Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Radio En Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science Community, right here on WCOM LP FM.
Community Radio for Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is 103.5 WCOM. And now, back to Claudio.
Hello, back to the speakeasy, and I've still got Bruce in the chair, in the hot seat here, so we're going to continue on with the adventures and the life of Bruce Whitman. That's pretty much what today's show is all about, and we can go back to any jumping off point we were at. I mean, we were talking about your dad, and I know that's, you made the most incredible tribute to him. Bruce put together this amazing video footage of pictures of his father and his mother and so on, and had a song playing to it. It's just a beautiful, beautiful piece of work, and I'm sure that everyone in the family must have really appreciated that.
It's something I had to do. I mean, my background is video, and when I just see something, I can, if there's a way to do it in video, that's the way I do it. That's how I talk. Is with video, and I love the editing process. I'd love to hear more about your dad.
Well, he was a tool and die maker. He passed away 2 years ago now, I guess, in January a couple of years ago. He was a tune die maker, world-renowned German. He was actually my stepfather, so we were there was a bit of distance between the two of us that neither one of us could ever really conquer. He thought an artist was just somebody that needed to go get a job. And I cultivated my artistic psyche despite him, not because of him. But I appreciate and love the man for the many things he did. Growing up in Africa would not have been possible without him. And there are so many things I'm grateful to him about. I really wish he was still here in many ways. Even though we were distant, we did have a friendship. And it's sad that he's passed on in that sense.
So did he ever get to see you perform?
Yes, he did. He came to my performance with the North Carolina Symphony and on various occasions when he saw me get standing ovations. And my brother said he was in the background going, "Yeah, that's my boy." And I said, my response to him was, "Yeah, you should have told him just to sit down because he had very little to do with it." But not to dishonor the man on any level, that there was just, I think he just came from a blue collar mentality that was international, in which the artist was just not a very elated figure.
Sure. Well, I think dads are so important to children. I feel strongly about that. I think there's a mom
totally
role
agree.
And
totally
a dad
agree.
Role. And you can just see, you know, I have two sons, and I watched them grow up, and I love that I got to work out of my – I have a home office, so I got to watch them grow up there.
Right.
And you can just see, you know, a mom will say no, and a dad will say yes when it comes to chainsaws.
Or motorcycles.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, my younger son has a motorcycle.
I'm a biker.
It's just, you know, dads just play a good role because they have to balance that. It's almost like a yin and yang. Almost.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Yeah.
And so it's just, and I love being a dad. I think it's my biggest blessing, really, is to be a dad. I didn't think we could be have children.
I've chosen not to in my life, but were I to have made that choice, I'm sure I would have loved it as well.
One of my most memorable moments about being a dad was. It was 8 years before we decided to have children because we were raising Martha's brothers. And so when we decided, it took us almost 3 years, and so we didn't know if we were going to have kids.
Hmm.
Well, I flew on a job to San Francisco where I was born, and there I am in the terminal when I get a phone call from my wife saying I'm going to be a dad. And I just
wow.
cried, probably for the first time ever in public.
I can imagine.
That was just such a big moment to me. And then, so the first son was named Andy. And he's about 2 years old, and he's playing in the bathtub, and he tells his mom, "Mom, I need this little bathroom to go with me." And Martha says, "Well, son, you're too old for this little bathroom." And he says, "It's not for me. It's for the little babe." And Martha goes, "The little babe?" And she thought maybe it was his imaginary friend, so she played along.
Uh-huh.
And a little while later, you know, it's something else for the little babe. Well, it turns out about 2 weeks later, she found out she was pregnant with our second son.
What a little psychic connection,
you know,
there.
He knew, and it's been proven. I've seen a show with that where some other parents had that same situation where they could smell it. I don't know what it is, but they
– Well, it's a presence.
Yeah.
You can't deny that.
So that was
– Amazing,
though. And they're both great brothers.
On that note, how about – let's go a little in that direction. Tell me about your two sons.
Well, the oldest son is a computer geek now, kind of like me. And in fact, I got a great picture of him sitting at his computer. Is about 5 years old. He's wearing my big glasses and he's typing away on the laptop. But he graduated from UNCW a couple years ago and took entrepreneurship and finance and minored in political science. And he's starting his own company down there in Wilmington.
Hmm.
And his younger brother is also down there. He's a senior taking psychology, and they both live in the same apartment complex but different apartments, so they can still
interesting.
Be,
so
still
they've
be
stayed close.
Yeah,
that's
really
great.
Close.
Yeah,
I mean they see each other all day, every day.
Wow,
they just help each other. And it's awesome. You can't be more blessed to have children that love each
other
and
that.
Get along with each other.
It's fantastic. Now, tell me a little more about the electric guitarist there.
Well, the younger son has picked up, I guess, some talent because my father was a musician. He played violin. My mother played piano. I play guitar. My wife plays guitar. That's how we met. And so my younger son, Scott, is incredible playing the guitar. And so, in fact, I'm going to play a little something right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. I was just going to bring that up. We're going to hold a little sound piece up to the microphone that's coming off his, what do you call that, smartphone? Or?
Yeah, the iPhone. Let's see. We're going to go to videos right here, and I'll play a little.
I told him I've had Jimi Hendrix here in the studio already, the guy that's replacing him.
Okay, here
Michael
we go.
Bryan
so
Spanar.
He's just jamming a little something to himself here. Here we go.
Here we go.
He just was jamming there.
He's having some fun.
Yeah.
Now, you're saying, I remember asking you early on, is that something he does to relieve anxiety, or is it something he's serious about?
No, he's very serious about it. I'm hoping he'll do something with it. He's very talented. You just saw a little something.
Has he ever been part of a band, or does
he
have his own?
That's one of his problems, is finding the right people, the right chemistry between people. It'll happen one day.
A common problem in that arena, no doubt.
Because he wants to do it without drugs. He wants to do it with people who also don't want to do drugs. And he wants to just have fun. And he can play jazz, he can play blues, and definitely play rock and roll. And I'm hoping he'll do something with it. We'll see what happens.
You know, I wonder what statement it makes that the Rolling Stones are still around and kicking with all the drugs they've taken. God knows.
I can go back to my dad. I want to tell you a story about that. Back in the 60s, my mom and my dad went to a party. And they came back home with a little pack of cigarettes. They're not smokers. They're non-smokers, but they got a party favor of cigarettes. That's what they did in the 60s for some reason. They gave you a pack of cigarettes.
Every movie started with a smoke scene.
So my brother and I are really curious. And we went up to my mom and dad and we said, do you mind if we try one of these? And that's where they did a defining moment. They said, sure, you go ahead. Here, light them up in our bathroom. So we lit up a cigarette in my parents' bathroom. Took one puff, and that was it. It was the nastiest, smelling, tastiest thing. Couldn't get that out of my taste buds for 2 days. I remember that. So because of that, I've never smoked. I've never done drugs. I just don't do that. And it was another defining moment that my parents—
How about your brother? Did anyone in the family take to smoking?
Oh, yeah. My younger brother, my sister, yeah. But my twin brother and I, we never smoked. Yeah. So it was just another defining moment.
Absolutely.
So that was kind of cool.
Well, let's have ourselves another little musical interlude, and then we're going to have a moment of radio theater, and I'll come back with Bruce. You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, brought to you by the historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council. Thanks for tuning us in.
Now for a moment of radio theater.
Seafarers. The captain cried, "We're home at last," as the ship came close to shore. I swore I'd leave the ocean then and ride her waves no more. We drank of the first of a loaded round, of which we'd all be drinking more. The toasting of mugs was the only sound until a drunkard struck the floor. We made it safe, the captain said, to sail that savage sea. Now you go home and I'll explain of the two that died for me. The first mate staggered outward, then turned to say goodbye. The chef, he headed homeward as he belched his last reply. It was soon that the crew had left him. Before long, they'd all bade farewell. And so we drank, eh, the captain and I, for we'd still many a drunk tale to tell. I propose a toast to Benjamin, for a mighty fine lad was he, who'd saved the heads of the captain and crew, then drowned in the savage sea. So I propose a toast to Arthur, said I, with a tear-eyed grin, who never knew what struck him till the great white pulled him in. We soon drank down every promise that another sun would rise, and then slept upon the premise that I'd spare my last goodbyes. The day broke grey and sullen as I awakened on the deck. Today he would be sailing alone upon this wreck. I climbed down to his cabin through a galley ruined below to suggest he hire crewmen as he yawned and then said, no. No, said he, my friend, I'll not take the chance again of reaching troubled waters and losing a few good men. He said he hadn't slept well, for the night was moist and hot. I could tell his dreams were troubled, though he spoke as they were not. The captain felt it duty to sail another 1,000 miles to bring tidings of dead crewmen to their loved ones on the isles. I had sworn to leave the ocean, though somehow I felt refrain. For without a friend's devotion, I felt his journey'd be in vain. Well, I soon replaced the mastmen who had lost their lives at sea. As I saw a weary captain look in disbelief at me. I thought you were set to leave, lad. Could have sworn I'd seen you go, said I. No, my friend, I'm staying for another wicked blow. Once we'd stocked with food and drink, we set her tattered sails for sea. And then we prayed she wouldn't sink and leave a faring memory. So I swore to leave the ocean and to ride her waves no more. Though I'd taken such a notion over 100 times before.
You're tuned to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
And we're going to Tucson, Arizona with Bruce Whitman. It is an interesting story I want to hear here.
Well, I've never lived in Arizona, but I have a couple Arizona stories for you. The first one is in Tucson, where I was there supporting a company sales meeting. And it was in a nice resort in the mountains. And one thing I remember about Tucson is that there's a observatory, a solar observatory on top of this mountain. And because of that, they don't want any light pollution. Okay.
Okay.
So you go to Tucson and you just, at night you look up and you can see all the stars.
I'll bet.
Because there's no light pollution anywhere in that town.
Big
so
sky.
Anyway, it was crazy. So anyway, I'm at this resort. I go to sleep. I get up in the middle of the night, have to go use the restroom, go inside, and I'm barefoot at the time, walk in there, and there's something moving. So I turn on the light, and there's a scorpion on the floor right by my feet. And it's a small one, which I understand later is more dangerous than the big one because they don't know how to use their venom. So I call, you know, downstairs. I have a friend here in the bathroom. I'd sure like to get rid of for me. And they come back up a little while later, can't find him. Well, they finally find him. He's crawling up the wall. And so they take him away. And later that morning, I tell the people about it, and all the girls are freaking out because they're worried about scorpions getting in their shoes that they left on their floor in their hotel.
They are actually considered an arachnid. They're in the spider family.
Well, what's crazy about scorpions, I learned, is that you can put one in a freezer for 6 months, pull him back out, and he's still alive. So they're studying how the scorpion works. Yeah. And so I'm on the tarmac for about 4 hours in the plane leaving to go back to Raleigh, and there's a guy telling me stories about scorpions, and that was one thing he said. But also he talks about he had an infestation in his house where they're all coming out of the ceiling fan. They're all flying.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. Another thing that I learned some years ago that I thought was fascinating is that ticks are in the spider family.
Wow. There you go. Yeah.
That's why they get on you, and they can climb up walls. Amazing. So you and Rocco have a little something in common about Arizona. Give us that scoop.
Well, Claudio, Bruce was saying that he lived in Tucson and knows something about Fort Huachuca, Arizona, which is an army post in Arizona. And you did a documentary.
And you were based there.
At one time, I was stationed when I was in the army at Fort Huachuca. And Fort Huachuca is not very far from the Mexican border. And maybe 75, 80 miles south of Tucson. And when I was there, it was a very isolated Army base. And this was 1966, so we're talking about 51 years ago. And I remember they had made a movie there with Gregory Peck and Bobby Darin 2 or 3 years before 66, and I think it was called Captain Newman, M.D., And they were using the old barracks from World War II, and it was a very isolated army post, and it was specifically picked for all sorts of programs and things going on that the army was doing back in the 60s, and it was isolated, and people would leave them alone.
And you made a documentary about this?
I've done several videos about Fort Huachuca. One is on the history of military Army military intelligence, and they're actually the main headquarters for the Army military intelligence is stationed in Fort Huachuca. One thing that's interesting about Fort Huachuca is it's surrounded by mountains, and because of that, it is isolated, and so there's no radio frequencies that can get into Fort Huachuca. And so because of that, they do a lot of testing for things that don't need to deal with radio frequencies. And so they have a lot of UAVs, which they call UAS back down there, and they fly all those things down there. So we're going to – go ahead. You were going to say something, Rocco.
What year did you do the documentary?
It's only been a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago. But it was on the history of military intelligence and the history. One of them was on the history of Fort Huachuca. In fact, if anybody emails me, you can go to my website and there's a little tiny clip. There's a couple clips about Fort Huachuca and about the history of military intelligence on eaglevideo.com.
Well, I believe it was an Indian outpost, Army Cavalry Indian fort back in the 1880s and 1890s, 1870s. After the Civil War, and the name Huachuca is an Indian name. The Chiricahua Apaches are in that area. And
do you know what it means, Huachuca?
I think Huachuca has something to do with the mountains.
Yeah.
The Huachuca
okay.
Mountains are surrounding the base, and
yeah.
It goes way back.
Yes.
It really does. And
well, the Buffalo soldiers were there at one time.
Ah, okay.
That was kind of interesting, and they did have to deal with a lot of border scraps with Mexico. Before it became an army post.
And there were no buffalo left. Not that that's one and the same thing anyway, back in those days.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was telling you earlier that I never lived in Arizona, but I do have Arizona stories.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a newer story back in the, let's say, maybe the early 90s, where I was asked to come to Scottsdale, Arizona, which is right outside of Phoenix, to help support a sales conference. And I had to do some editing, video editing. Well, back then, it was Beta SP, and so you can picture two huge Beta SP machines. They weigh each about 90 pounds and all this other equipment. So there was 1,000 pounds of gear they had to fly to me because I rented it, and they used a forklift to get into the hotel room. And while I was there, I'm editing cuts only. I can't even fade to black and two channels of audio. Cut to the present day. Now I'm on a laptop. I'm editing HD with as many channels of audio and all sorts of video effects that I ever want. And so I can appreciate back then to now how technically how things have changed.
I can well imagine.
For what I do in video production. It's just amazing what we can do nowadays we couldn't do before.
There's a story I want to pull out of you, and that's your experience with Hurricane Sandy.
Wow. Okay. One of my clients is Schindler Escalators. They're out of Clinton, North Carolina. They do they manufacture escalators, and one of their big clients is in New York City for the New York City Transit Authority. They buy escalators for the subway. So these are huge, very strong escalators, and they have 60 safety devices in an escalator. So anyway, we're up there shooting a training video to help the Transit Authority understand how to maintain and repair escalators. And we were going to do that for 2 weeks. The first week was escalator number one. The second week was escalator number two. The second week didn't pan out, and we were going to have to leave. So that Thursday before we're going to leave, I go and call up and get new tickets. I say, we're going to stay for 1 week. Give me new tickets. They said, fine. That Sunday, we're getting ready to leave. Turns out Sandy is coming at noon that day. And on Thursday, I didn't know about it, the hurricane, the storm coming. So anyway, we were lucky, right? We have three people, three tickets. We go to the ticket counter Sunday morning. There's only one ticket. What am I going to do? So executive decision. I point to one guy, said, you are going to go back to Raleigh with all the gear. The two of us are going to find some way to get out of here. So we're at the ticket counter, and we're bothering pestering this person. You know, here's my tickets. How come we only got one ticket? Well, don't worry about it. I'll help you find some. Blah, blah, blah. Why are you standing there? Go. And we had tickets to go to Chicago. So we race down the raceway there, and we come to security, and it's from here to the Dean Dome.
So a queue from here to the Dean Dome.
So I'm an ex-news guy. I'm a proactive person. I go right up to the security guy. I said, look, I need to get through. Me and my buddy have to catch this plane to Chicago now. He said, fine. He takes us right through security just like that, and we jump on the plane. We get to Chicago, and we make it in time. And so, you know, just appreciation. And it's just, what if we'd stayed another week? We would have been downtown Lower Manhattan. I have no idea what would have happened to us.
You know, at the time this was all going on, having spent a lot of my life at sea, I've developed a pretty good intuition for storms and what they mean, what different rhythms and different vibrations mean. I sensed that Sandy was going to be a problem, but I had no idea that Sandy was going to be a wipeout.
You and several million people.
Yeah.
They were not prepared for that. And one of the escalators that we worked on went underwater, for sure, Battery Park.
Mm.
They have to replace the whole thing.
Well, you know, Bruce and Claudio, a lot of people that are not familiar with hurricanes, people up north, New England, out west, a lot of them believe that when a hurricane comes through, it starts blowing very hard, that wind goes up, and within a half hour, an hour, it's gone. But that isn't the case, and these hurricanes can stay around for 12 hours, and you get continuous wind for 10, 12, 15 hours sometimes.
Yeah,
and
very true.
And that's half of the damage that's caused is by the time duration of the hurricane that it keeps blowing over your area.
And frequently the eye just stays in one place, and so
sometimes
that's just
it stalls. Yeah. Exactly.
What was that tornado that came through and took out Lowe's near me in Sanford? I remember my best friend is a sea captain. He lives in Fort Pierce, Captain Don Punker.
It was about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, I forget the name of it. We had a name for it. Anyway, it took down Lowe's and half a shopping center across the street from it in Sanford. I get this phone call on that day. I noticed sort of an orange glow outside, so I knew there was a tempest somewhere. But I didn't sense it was, you know, a danger to me, just the nautical intuition. But he calls me up from Fort Pierce, says, Claudio, this thing is heading your way. Get the hell out of your trailer. He calls it my land yacht. And I took great caution with his warning. But in the end, when it all came down, when that thing finally rolled through, he was only off by 9 miles.
I think this Hurricane Sandy was a very slow-moving storm that just crept along the New Jersey coast and then New York City and up into New England. And that was half the problem. It was a Category 1 or 2 storm where the winds were maybe not over 100 or 110 miles an hour. But they just lasted so long, and it just stayed there and beat everything up.
Well, what other story can I pull out of you? I'm sure you've got some similar stories, or I want to catch up the fan base you got out there listening. So catch us up, bro.
Let's see. Well, I like to talk a little bit about my pro bono work that I do.
I was going to ask you to do that anyway, yes.
I shared while we were off mic about meeting a young couple from South Africa
right.
years ago, and they needed some help with starting a new nature teaching facility in South Africa when they went back.
And you were talking about the fact that they wanted to use nature as a common ground because nationally there are at least 11 languages spoken and wanted to create some kind of a common ground to bring these cultures together.
And so they wanted to start a camp called Camp Nilu, which stands for Nature Education Leads to Understanding. This is several years ago. And so, you know, back then I wanted to – one of my life dreams was always to make enough money so I didn't have to worry about it and just do videos to help people.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I wasn't in that situation. But I saw this young couple. I said, you guys need a video. So I went and I produced a video of them for free, gave it to them. They took it to South Africa. I made got copies for them, took it to South Africa. They got the money, and they started this camp. It's been around for a while now. And since that time, I decided, no, I'm not going to wait till I'm fabulously rich to do this. I'm going to do one a year to a really deserving nonprofit. And I've done it for Ronald McDonald House. I've done it for Healing Place, for the Food Bank. I've done it for several nonprofits. I do one a year. Give them about $25,000 to $30,000 worth of service. I give them a 5 to 7 minute fundraising video, a PSA, and a radio TV and a TV PSA, which I saw the other day. I did one for Hope Line of North Carolina. It was on WRAL News 11
Fantastic.
O'clock a couple days ago, so I thought that was kind of cool.
I just want the listeners to know I've put in a plug for WCOM, but we'll see what happens.
So I do love to give back. And I just think I think everyone should try to give back if they can.
I totally agree. That's what I'm doing with my life very much now, too.
Bruce, you were telling us that you enjoy photography. When you were taking pictures with 35 millimeter cameras, what was your favorite camera or some of the cameras you really enjoyed using?
Well, you know, I've always, as far as video, I do video, not film. So I've done video cameras. And so when I was at WRL-TV for 10 years, we were working with Ikigamis. And then when I started my company with a partner, we used Sonys. And now I have an HD Sony HD camera that I love. And it's all used to be tape. Now everything is on a card, which is awesome.
Which is amazing. I know.
Yeah, it really is. That whole world has changed dramatically.
So much really for the better in that sense.
Yeah, it's been great. I love technology. I love to see it progress. And, I'm really blessed that I can use the new technology to help people make videos. And the whole idea is that you do a product, you make money, so you can do the next one and feed your family. So I just think it's great. As far as still cameras, now, my dad was a shutterbug. His mother was a shutterbug. He shot a lot in Yosemite. That's how she met her future husband was on a camera, you take pictures of all other people. Anyway, so then my dad took a lot of pictures. I have a lot of negatives of his from San Francisco that are amazing. So I became a shutterbug.
Do you know what his camera was? What did he like?
It was a Grayflex.
All right.
Grayflex. It was a
high-end.
2.25.
Mm-hmm, right.
So when my brother and I were like in fourth or fifth grade, for a summer class, they had us do a photography class. And so we got to shoot with a camera and develop black and white film and print it. And it was just awesome. And so later on, I bought you're talking about cameras. I had a Nikon.
I'm a Nikon man, yeah.
And that got stolen. Then I got an Olympus. And then now everything's digital. So,
yeah.
And my wife's turned into a shutterbug because of her painting. She wants to paint from her own pictures rather than copy from.
Well, you showed me that one sailboat scene that you took a photograph of it. My God, her picture is almost identical, except just brings it out a bit more. So
she's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
and so she's got a Canon.
Incredible artwork, yeah. Martha.
So so we're a family of shutterbugs and enjoy photography a lot. And it's interesting that I can use that talent for my video too.
Absolutely. Well, you certainly have that eye. Yeah. I loved. I don't know if you remember it anymore, but you did a video of young horses, I think something in Kentucky, foals, and you put Dan Fogelberg's Run for the Roses to it, and I just thought that was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Well, I got to, when I was at Channel 5, I used to hang out in a helicopter. That was my favorite thing to do, and got to fly to the beach on, what's the island with all the horses, Sheffield?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, anyway, the horse island.
Yes.
And I'm shooting out the window, and I have a wide-angle adapter on the camera, and daggum if that wind didn't take it right off the camera, and it dropped as we were flying. And so I told the pilot, whoa, and he did a little hammer drop, and we landed right on the beach and started looking for that lens, $500 lens back
Woo-hoo.
Then. Yeah, $500 meant a lot back then. And it was meant my career, too.
If mm-hmm.
Well, about 20 minutes later, dang if we didn't find that lens just sitting there. You know, piece of glass in the
– It's amazing how tough they were.
Yeah, and not a scratch. It's like, wow, that's pretty good.
My Nikon camera has got a 72-millimeter lens on it, and it was dropped from the 10th floor of an apartment one time, and the outer rim that protected the thing took on a big dent. The rest of the camera was fine.
Excellent.
Yeah. And it's a heavy thing, too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The sad thing is now it's just sitting on my mantle. I don't use it anymore because I got myself a digital Nikon.
Everything's digital now, yeah, which is great because my wife takes about 200 or 300 pictures a day.
Woohoo.
So, yeah, that costs.
How many can you take on a card? I've been wondering about that.
It depends how big the card is and if you're shooting RAW or just JPEG. So it depends on a lot of things. You can get several hundred, you know, a couple. You can get 1,000.
So hundreds.
Oh, yeah.
And how does that fly when you're doing both video and photography?
Well, I shoot video. So it's not a still camera, it's a video camera. So it's a little bit different.
Although, my camera's both, that's why I'm asking.
Some of these people are shooting a DSLR and they're shooting video and stills. And I'm not to that point because I'd rather have a video camera where you can hold it, you can zoom with it. There's a lot of things that you can't do with a DSLR that you can with a regular mm-hmm. professional video camera. That's just what I like to do.
Well, let's get your contact information. Anybody interested in possibly being serviced by Eagle Video?
Well, website's the best way to get a hold of me is eaglevideo.com, all one word. There's probably 50 different clips you can watch. I'm included on about Fort Huachuca, a little piece on escalators. I've done things on hog farms, done pickles, just all sorts of things. And I try to put a lot of different videos on so people can see all the different things that I do. It's frustrating sometimes when someone come up and say, we need to have you do a video on how to catch a frog. And I'll say, well, I've never done a video on how to catch a frog, but I'm pretty sure I can do it. And they say, no, we need to find someone who's already done it before. So that's why I put a lot of different videos on the website so they can see the kind of the scope of what I've done in the last 25 years.
Pretty impressive scope, that's for sure. Let's go to one more moment of music, and then we'll come back and wrap up the show. Thank you.
You're tuned to 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carborough. Están escuchando a 103.FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carborough. Thanks for listening to our station.
I'd like to tell you that your host, Claudio, is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and a master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com. Now back to Claudio.
And here we are for the finale. I've got Bruce Whitman in the studio. He's with Eagle Video. That's his company, and he has worked practically everywhere. I think he's done some of the most inspiring footage that I've ever seen in my life. And we've been friends for a while.
We have. In fact, you came to our house many years ago and did some cooking with us. And
That's
I always remember those crepes.
A memorable evening. And I remember you remembering all the songs I liked by Earl Klug and later putting an entire album together of everything I told you I liked, which was just during the run of a conversation. I was amazed how well you remembered it, and I still have that, and I still play it.
Oh, wow. Well, he's a great guitarist, and I've learned some new ones, too, since my son's a guitarist. I've been picking up on great guitarist. I don't know if you've ever heard of Tommy Emmanuel.
Of course. I hosted him at Carolina
Holy
Theater.
Holy moly.
The most amazing person I've ever met. A Chet Atkins aficionado.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. He is incredible.
Yeah, and a great performer.
He can make one man sound like he's got a whole band with him. He can. He's that fast.
Yes, he's very talented. If I got even close to that, that'd be great.
And
I want a Maton now.
I remember handing him his guitar, the one that he does the special effects on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that thing was scratched up so badly. It's amazing.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what it looks like.
No. No.
So what it sounds like.
He could do jungle sounds, bird sounds, and the most amazing things on guitar. And great storyteller, great singer. Tommy Emmanuel, if you guys are not aware of him, is one of the greatest things that's happening with guitars these days.
Yeah. And, I have a background in music, but I think music is such an international language.
It is.
I think people don't even have to speak the same language, but they can appreciate the same music.
We should force all of our politicians to play some. Go over there and play a song, damn it. And get some peace and quiet happening.
Yeah. So, music. I loved your opening piece, Take Five.
Dave Brubeck.
Dave Brubeck.
Yes, that was good.
And that was interesting because as I was studying his music, it turned out it's written in 5/4, which I'd never learned before. And actually, the Beatles wrote something where they wrote a song in 3/4, and then it went to 5/4 for a minute, back to 3/4. So it's interesting to follow different musicians and what they've done.
Did we touch on that story we spoke about earlier, how the Beatles came by their name? Have we mentioned
on
air?
Buddy Holly.
Yeah,
and
we
the
have
crickets.
Mentioned that. Okay.
You know, that instrumental, Take Five, is from a album called Time Out, and that was the largest selling piece of jazz music ever recorded up to that time. It came out maybe in 1958 or 59.
Amazing.
And it made Dave Brubeck a household name in the world of
music.
He's
been one of my favorites for a long time.
That album was a huge selling album back then too. Time Out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we were talking about our dads, and my dad loved classical music. He had thousands and thousands of hours he recorded off the radio, and then he would catalog them. So we had like several hundred reel-to-reels, each of them with 6 hours on it.
Wow.
That he had cataloged classical music. But he also loved jazz, and he loved Herb Alpert.
Him very much, too, that Latin sound.
Yeah, I listened to him a lot.
So. Well, let's wrap up the show with you giving us your contact information one more time to those that want to be in touch with you.
I'd love to hear from people or visit my website. Eaglevideo.com is the best way to get me. Or you can text or you can email me, bruce@eaglevideo.com.
Easy enough. And otherwise, you can just contact me at claudioarts.com, and I'll get the word to him. Thank you for tuning us in today. The show is brought to you by the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council. Thank you, Rocco. Thank you, Will. Thank you, Bruce. Great having you on again.
Thanks.
And this will continue.
Appreciate it, guys, and really enjoyed it.
Cheers.